Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
30 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The following members are excused from the call of the House today. Representative Cotton, Representative Boucher, Representative Donnelly, Representative Kopanen, Representative Boyer, Representative Zawacki, and I would move and ask unanimous consent that we also excuse Representative Wallace, who is ill.
Any objections? Hearing no objections, Representative Wallace is excused from the call of the House. Our chaplain today is Bishop Michael Kenny. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
I really never mind the Kennedy business, but that's okay. That tells you what side of the house I sit on. No. Let us pray. Dear God, may your kingdom come. How often we say these words, pray this simple phrase. I'm sure we mean it, although I'm not so certain we understand it. I'm even less confident that we act upon it in our daily lives. So often the kingdoms we build are less than yours, sometimes even opposed to yours. Some of our kingdoms are petty, selfish, limited to satisfying our own narrow visions, our comfort or security. They are not bad kingdoms, just little kingdoms. Other kingdoms we build or work for are more serious and far more worldly. They are kingdoms directed and dominated by the powerful circumstances and people around us. As always, the great ones of this world love to make their authority felt, and they do. And we often dance to their tunes and build to their dreams. And somewhere in all of this, so many little people get lost. Those who sleep in our streets, crowd our prisons, or line up for food stamps, whoever hears or builds to their dreams. You do. All the while, like a seed planted in the earth, your kingdom grows silently and imperceptibly. Yours is a kingdom so unlike the ones we labor for. Yours is a kingdom where the poor are blessed, where the meek and gentle inherit the earth, where those who mourn are comforted, where peacemakers are called your children, where the last shall be the first, and where everyone can find forgiveness. Do we dare pray for such a kingdom? Amen.
Representative Sun, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 66th and the 67th legislative days?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 66th and the 67th days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals for the 66th and 67th legislative days, as certified by the clerk, be approved.
Are there any objections as to the correctnesses of the journal? Hearing no objections, the journals stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this week, we had the mayor of Houston, and today it's our pleasure to have the city clerk of Houston. Please help me welcome the one and only Elsie O'Brien.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's Gallery B, former Governor Bill Sheffield.
Governor Sheffield, as a distinguished citizen of the state of Alaska, and on the floor above us not too long ago, would you care to share with us a few words? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce a special guest, a gentleman who has given some time and effort and has helped my office the last few weeks, Mr. Stephen Smith. And next to him is Mr. Stan Rahm, is my chief of staff.
Representative Boucher, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I missed my plane this morning, and I got the message yesterday that you sent, so you can unlock me. I'm here. I'd like to introduce in Gallery B some young people that we've had an opportunity to work with at the Anchorage Community College, members of the Anchorage Student Association, Virginia Belknap, Rob Walters, and Mauricia Scott. Where are you guys? Okay, I guess they're tardy. But there's two youngsters that are not tardy. That's Matt Smith, who has been with me for the last 3 years, and Stacy Carter, who on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Michael Cooper has been very gracious and let her come over and work with us on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, in addition to being a student at alternate school, while she looks after young Wade over at the governor's mansion. But both Matt and Stacy are members of the alternate high school in this community, and there are hundreds of young people like them that would be just absolutely delighted to work with legislators during the afternoon. And if any of you are interested, I know several of you already have them on board. If any of you are interested, we've got a list of young people that would be interested in working with you as aides. They're very computer literate, and they're the future of Alaska. So I'd like to introduce my two special session son and daughter, Matt Smith and Stacy Carter. Okay, Matt, you can get back to work.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two special guests today from Kodiak, two people who are dedicated public servants in their respective roles. One is Susan Brain, who is manager of KMXT, that all-important aspect of communications in rural Alaska, public radio. And the other person is Dennis Murray, who is the director and has been the director of the Kodiak Senior Citizens. Would you please help me welcome my two guests?
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have several guests in Gallery A this morning. The first is a young man I had the pleasure of meeting just a few minutes ago. He's here today on behalf of the American Constitution Committee. Those of you who may not be familiar with the committee, it sponsors local and national conferences on the constitutions related to issues such as religion and the state, public morality in a free society, bigotry and the law, and the U.S. Constitution and global responsibility. This young man lives between District 14 and 15, so it's my pleasure today, and I'll ask him to stand at this time, to introduce Mr. Eugene Hernet. Mr. Speaker, my next two guests, one is a gentleman that we have known for some time and well respect, but he has a guest with him today that I'd like to introduce. The gentleman hails from San Diego, California, and when I was introduced to him this morning over the phone, I was told that there are some who are somewhat down on Alaska as a thriving economy. This gentleman has a company called Stevens & Associates, and he's here looking at Alaska with the hopes of making some investments in our state. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Jim Stevens and his guest, Mr. Bill Sumners, in fact, Senator Bill Sumners.
Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a great deal of honor today to present a person who's probably been the major influence in my life and one of the reasons I'm here, and one of the reasons I probably have as even temperament as all of you have come to know, but also known as one of the more famous cooks in Ketchikan. But with me in Gallery B today is my mother, Karen Sund. Also, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to introduce the first time this year accompanying my mother is my wife, Dee Dee.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Pierce and I have another constituent we'd like to introduce in Gallery B, Mr. Don Hennessy.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Bill Hudson and I have a constituent and friend in Gallery A, Ellie Schmidt, who is the sponsor of the Roundtable for High School Gifted Students, and also a visiting student with her, Lisa Wyatt.
Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, I have a constituent that recently moved from City of Dillingham to the City of Sandpoint to work on public radio. I hope we can keep her working. Ms. Kelly Law in Gallery B.
Are there any further guests for introduction? Messages from the Governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citation, and it was transmitted to enrolling, in memoriam Hernando Villarma. The Senate also passed and returned committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 17, Labor and Commerce, relating to the use and recording of trade names to designate seafood products of Alaska origin, and this resolution has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed and transmitted for consideration Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 22, by Fakes, Bennett, Abood, Binkley, Coghill, Eliason, Fisher, Halford, Jones, Kelly, Kurtula, Sturgiluski, Euling, Rohde, and Zemanski, opposing imposition of an income tax on individuals.
Two standing committees, State Affairs and the Finance Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 24, CNRA, by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, relating to the establishment of a priority access zone at Unalaska for domestic fishermen and processors.
Labor and Commerce and the Resources Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 87, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to the credit card interest rate that may be charged by certain financial institutions.
It'll be Labor and Commerce, Judiciary, and Finance.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 125, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, and act relating to the Alaska Marine Transportation Advisory Board.
Transportation and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Resolution 5 relating to the effect of budget reductions on local governments, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Springer Chairman, concurring Cato, Zawacki, Herman, and Springer. House Resolution Number 5 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Rules Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 12, proposing amendments to Rule 23 of the Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to committee meetings, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurring Navarre, Grusendorf, Hoffman, Martin, Pettijohn, and Grunberg. House Concurrent Resolution Number 12 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 23 relating to tributylin, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Herman, co-chair, concurring Hoffman, Pierce, Sund, Herman, Schultz, Springer, Navarre, and Davidson. House Joint Resolution Number 23 has no further referral. The Rules Committee has considered House Bill 43 relating to return transportation for workers, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 43 rules with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing do pass, Navarre, Grusendorf, Hoffman, and Grunberg, having no recommendation, Martin and Pettijohn. House Bill 43 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 100, Annual Report of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 100, Finance, with the same title. Reports it back as follows with a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Wallace, Brown, Swackhammer, and Davis, having no recommendation, Gall, Pershaw, Boyer, Larson, Rieger, and Frank. House Bill 100 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 139 relating to the jurisdiction of the Superior and District Courts, judicial disqualification and impeachment, the procedure for judicial retirement due to incapacity or disability, and proceedings before magistrates, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 139, Judiciary, with a new title, and reports it back as follows. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Porchot, Boyer, and Wallace, having no recommendation, Larson, Swackhammer, Rieger, Frank, Brown, Davis, and Gall. House Bill 139 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 140 relating to parole, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 140, Judiciary, with a new title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sun Chairman, concurring Sun, Ulmer, Taylor, Navarre, Cotton, and Grunberg. Barnes has no recommendation. House Bill 140 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Transportation Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 4, State Affairs, Outdoor Advertising, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 4, State Affairs, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Cato Chairman, concurring Miller, Springer, Pierce, Boucher, and Cato. Senate Bill 4 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered Senate Bill 131 amended, regulating the sale and use of TBT-based marine anti-fouling paints and coatings, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 131, Resources, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Herman, Chairman, concurring Herman, Navarre, Hoffman, Pierce, Sun, Schultz, Springer, and Davidson. Senate Bill 131 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Angoon Old Timers basketball team, 1987 gold medal C bracket champions by Representative Gall. And a citation honoring Heidelberg Sons of Sequan, 1987 gold medal B bracket champions by Representative Gall. Citation honoring George Atla, 1987 Open North American sled dog champion by Representatives Miller and Senator Coghill. Citation honoring Eric Kiefel, Aaron Overton, Aaron Morse, David Oberg, 1987 Alaska Academic Decathlon winners by Representatives Swackhammer and Navarre. Citation honoring Howard Thomas, Alaska Engineering Society's 1986 Anchorage Engineer of the Year Award by Representatives Collins, Barnes, Furness, Grunberg, and Menard. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Citations will go to rules for calendaring.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 18 by Cato, relating to a special report on long-term operations of the Alaska Railroad.
Transportation and the Finance Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction.
This brings us down to introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 216 by Larson, an act relating to game farming.
Resources and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 217 with a governor's letter and a fiscal note by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. An act relating to purchase of foreign investments by the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund.
State Affairs, Finance.
House Bill 218 with a governor's letter and a zero fiscal note with analysis by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. An act creating the Alaska Center for International Business and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Hess, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 219 by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. An act making an appropriation to the University of Alaska for operation of the Alaska Center for International Business. Making a special appropriation to the University of Alaska for payment as a grant to the University of Alaska Foundation for operation of the Alaska Center for International Business and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Hess, and Finance.
House Bill 220 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council. An act relating to legislative per diem and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 221 by Cato. An act suspending requirements for reports on arrangements and offers to sell the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date.
Transportation and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 222 by the Labor and Commerce Committee. An act relating to occupational licensing and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Finance.
House Bill 223 by Swackhammer and Larson. An act relating to permanent fund dividends and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 224 by Brown, Ulmer, Pierce, Ellis, and Collins. An act relating to employment rights based on pregnancy, childbirth, and adoption.
Hess, Judiciary, and Finance.
House Bill 225 by the Judiciary Committee by request. An act relating to citations for vehicle and traffic offenses.
Community and Regional Affairs, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 226 by Herman by request. An act relating to fisheries business tax refunds to local government and providing for an effective date.
CRA, Resources, and the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk at this time please read the first item on that calendar?
House Bill 88 by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. An act relating to private causes of action by businesses under the Alaska Unfair Trade Practices and Consumer Protection Act and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Concurring Donnelly, Davidson, Boucher, Kopanen, and Ellis. Furness has no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 88 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Sun Chairman. Concurring Sun, Navarre, Omer, Grunberg, Taylor, and Barnes. Cotton has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill Number 88.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the CS Judiciary? Hearing no objection, the CS Judiciary has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to Amendment Number 1 before us?
Amendment Number 1 by Pettijohn to page 1, line 24, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. What the amendment does essentially is make clear that the judge in a case covered by this statute would have the authority to award not just all of the actual attorney's fees, but in some cases it would be appropriate to just award a portion of them. It might be an excessive Rule 82, less than actual, and it clarifies that the judicial branch will have discretion in these things, and in some cases it could be important. Thank you.
Are there any objections to Amendment Number 1? No objections. Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
No further amendments. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the bill, that is Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 88 as amended, be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 88, Judiciary amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to private and class actions under the Alaska, Unfair Trade Practices and Consumer Protection Act.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for the question? Representative Gull, are you seeking the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to hear a brief statement on the bill from somebody from the Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. This bill was originally introduced by the governor. And if you look at the original bill as contrasted with the Judiciary Committee substitute and the letter of transmittal, you'll see that it's an important step forward in consumer protection, and it's also a step forward to help small businesses. It allows businesses to bring private causes of action to abate unfair trade practices. And this is important because often a small business will suffer unjustly at the hands of another unscrupulous competitor. Presently, private citizens can bring actions, but this will allow businesses to do it as well. This is particularly important now because due to budget cutbacks, the Office of the Consumer Protection Office in the Department of Law has been zeroed out, and it's important that we allow people to act as private attorney general and enforce the law, thereby making certain that unscrupulous businesses do not commit unfair trade practices. In the Judiciary Committee, my distinguished colleague from Wrangell and myself worked on the bill, and we dealt with the rest of the section of law relating to private and class actions under the unfair trade practices. What we did was we cleaned up the language of the bill. We cleaned up the language involving class actions, which is now covered in a court rule. It used to be that you would have to submit proposed class action to the Attorney General, and it was a cumbersome process. We've streamlined the process. We've also amended the section dealing with costs and attorney's fees to allow the court to award them to both sides, to whichever is the prevailing side. Up to the present time, only a defendant would be entitled to actual costs and fees in a frivolous case or some totally non-meritorious situation. We may have a situation where there's a non-meritorious defense and the action should have been stopped, and there's a delay and a denial, and the small business or the plaintiff incurs substantial costs and fees, and they certainly should be entitled to be reimbursed in a just case. I think it's a bill that is a major step forward in the area of consumer protection, also a major step forward showing our commitment as the State House and the administration's commitment to assist small businesses in this state in this time of economic crisis. I urge the support of the bill.
Any further debate? Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question for my own information is, I'm wondering if actions can be brought against the state, like if certain people feel that the state's in competition with them.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I was going to wait until if there were any other questions to answer them all at once. But I'll proceed. To answer my friend from the Aleutians, this is not dealing with actions against the state. The Unfair Trade Practices Act statute has nothing to do with causes of action against the state. There's a separate statute dealing with causes of action against the state, and that's the Little Tort Claims Act. That's in a different part of this. It's in Title IX, and it doesn't deal with unfair trade practices. It deals with actions for negligence and various other types of torts, but not this, and this act doesn't relate to that at all.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just had one question again on, for my information. Does this statute, 45-5471, or the bill in some other way address predatory pricing. Is that one of the unfair trade practices that's addressed here?
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The statute that is the underlying statute that defines the terms unfair methods of competition lists some 28 different unfair trade practices. And predatory pricing is not among them. Misleading advertising and that sort of thing is in here, but it doesn't try to set the prices or prohibit the fair marketplace with respect to the setting of prices. That is nothing that has been ever added into Section 471. And again, the bill itself doesn't deal with Section 471, but simply deals with Section 531, which is the method of enforcing violations of 471 in the sense of private causes of action, not through the Attorney General, but private causes of action.
Representative Sun.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, 2 points. One, to note that the Consumer Protection Division of the Department of Law is not likely to survive this year's budget round, and this is felt as one aspect to give the businesses and the people a cause of action to enforce consumer protection on their own. Secondly, I would note in 4550-471, in answer to the prior speaker, the 28 listed acts are not inclusive. Section B, it just says these do not prohibit you from having any other unlawful acts listed in B are not in addition to or not limited the types of unlawful acts and practices actionable at common law or under other state statutes. So you're not limited to those listed 28. If you have another cause of action under another statute, you can use that. But it doesn't exactly hit predatory pricing, but it does hit the issue of advertising goods you don't intend to sell or advertising a good of which you only have one and you can reasonably expect 100 requests. Those types of issues are itemized in here.
Any further debate? Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if this has been addressed in the debate, I didn't hear it. But it seems like on Section 2, there seems to be a substantial change in the statutes on the award to the prevailing party. In the prior statutes, it said that the award would be to the defendant, and it looks like a substantial policy change there, and I was just wondering if anyone could clarify that.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous statute contained two subsections dealing with costs and attorney's fees. Subsection D provided that in an action brought by a person under this section, the court may award, in addition to the relief provided in this section, reasonable attorney's fees and costs. Subsection G provided that if the court finds for the defendant in an action brought under this section, it may award the defendant an amount equal to the actual costs and attorney's fees the defendant incurred in the defense. What we have done, Mr. Speaker, is combine the two into subsection G. If you look at Section 4 of the bill, and I'd refer my friend from Fairbanks to the final Section 4, subsection D is repealed. And so what we've done is allow the court to award now, as the result of the amendment by the minority leader, all or a portion of the actual costs and attorney's fees incurred by any prevailing party. And obviously the court would normally not award full costs and attorney's fees. It would take an egregious case, either a non-meritorious case and a very legitimate defense, or a totally non-meritorious defense and a legitimate plaintiff to get actual costs and attorney's fees. Normally the courts only award part of your costs and attorney's fees.
Representative Sun.
The representative from Fairbanks, the translation is the defendant and the plaintiff are now treated equal. Both can apply for their own actual attorney's fees.
That's my normal role as chairman.
Representative Taylor.
I might also add that we're dealing here for the members that haven't had an opportunity to look all of this up and get into the fine detail of it. We're dealing here with a statute that provides for extraordinary relief. It provides for treble damages. And that's only found in very, very few sections of our statutes. And because it is such an odd relief, so to speak, or unique relief, it's because of certain egregious things that go on out there in the marketplace. And as we, the state, are no longer going to be involved with our Attorney General's office participating in these matters, when the bill came to the committee, we found that we had to do pretty much a rewrite of that entire section. And that's why this bill is significantly different from the one that the governor proposed to us. Hopefully, by making both parties equal to the representative from Fairbanks, we provide for a better balance, and we also provide, if you will, instructions to the court that in cases of this type, they should look beyond Rule 82 and provide now for more meaningful recompense for costs on bringing these actions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Davis.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Could we have a brief at ease, please?
The House please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have the bill before us under third reading and under debate. Is there any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 88, Judiciary Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
32 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 88, Judiciary Amended, has passed the House. Effective date. No. Okay. Representative Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, if we might move back up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Behind me in Gallery A are two ladies I had the opportunity to work with over the last couple days. They're meeting here in town at this time, and that's the chairman of the Older Alaskans Commission. And her name is Peggy Bergen, and she's from Anchorage. And sitting with her is Millie Terwilliger, who is from Representative Schultz's district in Tok. And Millie is a commissioner on the Older Alaskans Commission. I'd ask you to welcome them.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize. Millie, when she comes down here, occasionally hides from me. So, hi, Millie.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce another member of my staff who did a lot of work. Two members of my staff, one hidden behind the post, Secretary and Press Assistant Heather Arnett, and my Legislative Assistant Mark Hanley, who did a lot of work on these.
Any further guests for introduction? Back down to the daily calendar, we have some citations for approval. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have five citations on the calendar today, and I'd move and ask unanimous consent that they be adopted by the House. First honors Norman Nault. Second honors Petersburg High School. Third honors George Van Brunt. Fourth honors Hansi Gnad, All-American 1987. And the fifth honors J.J. Jesse Jackson, All-American 1987.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations have been approved. This brings us down the daily order of business to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two items of unfinished business. We have a bill that was held over till reconsideration today, and that's House Bill number 124. I would move and ask unanimous consent that that be held over on reconsideration until next Monday.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, that will be reconsideration will be available on Monday.
And secondly, Mr. Speaker,
I would move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House as indicated. Representative Collins from 4:30 p.m. Friday today, March 27, to plain time Monday, March 30. Again, Representative Collins from 4:30 p.m. Friday, April 10, to plain time Monday, April 13. Representative Menard from after session Thursday, April 16, to plain time Tuesday, April 21. Representative Navarre from 6:30 a.m. Friday, April 10, to plain time Monday, April 13. Extension for Representative Frank's requested excused absence from Friday, March 27, today, all day, but he is here, to plain time Monday, March 30. And finally, Representative Davis from 5 p.m. today, March 27, to plain time Monday, March 30.
We have a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, would the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, the majority went through a list of membership that wanted to be excused from the call of the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
Yes, I'd like to add also Representative Boucher from after session today to plain time Tuesday, March 31. And again for Representative Boucher from all day Friday, April 10, to plain time Monday, April 13.
Are there any objections? Representative Cato, or are you seeking the floor? Hearing no objections, the members mentioned by the Majority Leader are excused from the call of the House. Unfinished business, Representative Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like the permission of the body to withdraw HB 100, an act relating to Alaska Railroad annual report.
Are there any objections? The bill is in possession of the House. Hearing no objections, the bill is withdrawn. Any further unfinished business? Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Bourchaud.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to announce a series of meetings of the House Finance Committee and the House Finance Committee's subcommittees on various budgets that will be taking place in Anchorage tomorrow morning and afternoon. All of these subcommittee and committee meetings will be teleconferenced to Anchorage and, I mean, to Juneau and to Fairbanks. Here in Juneau, for members wishing to attend 9 to 11 tomorrow morning, subcommittee on the DOT budget in Butrovich room, 9 to 10:30, the DEC budget in Belt's room, 9 to 11:30 a.m., the subcommittee on the HES budget in House Finance, 10:30 to noon, Commerce Department budget in Belt's room, and then in the afternoon, 1:30 to 4:30, the House Finance full committee meeting on the budget overview and public testimony in Anchorage will be teleconferenced to the State Affairs room, room 102 in the Capitol.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could I get permission of the body to return to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask the members to welcome a guest we have today in Gallery A. And maybe she'll stand and be recognized. Her name is Trevina Stewart, and she's an RSVP student from Haynes.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back down to committee announcements. Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The University Budget Subcommittee will meet Tuesday at 5 p.m. in House Finance Room.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Tuesday from 10 to 11, there will be a teleconference on House Bill 93 on recreation rivers.
Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As noted, the House Special Committee on Telecommunication on April the 2nd Will be hosting Mr. Locke Allen from IBM's Center for Telecommunications from Raleigh. He's one of the foremost experts in this particular area. Because of the interest, he'll not only be making a presentation there, but also at 9 o'clock in the morning in the governor's conference room. I know many of you are interested in this area, and I'd highly recommend these hearings as being very informative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any general announcements? Mr. Minority Leader?
We have it at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we're under general announcements. Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Speaker, I have two announcements. First of all, the Southeast Caucus will be meeting at noon today in room 102. And secondly, the Juno Lyric Opera will be putting on The Gondoliers, which is a Gilbert and Sullivan opera. It is starting this weekend, Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon, 8 and at 2, and then again next weekend, Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m. And The Gondoliers will be singing this noon in the State Office Building for those of you who would like a preview. Thank you.
Representative Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're going to have our TGIF party today, and it's Marmot Party. And hopefully it's only the first one, and the original will be coming up on February 2nd. But we are going to invite all the members of the body and their staff and press and whoever wants to come. On the cake it says pass HB 181. It's a piece of cake. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just would like to remind the members we're going to have three bills up potentially for reconsideration on Monday, and they should hold their packets. House Bill 124, which is the oil and gas conservation tax. House Joint Resolution 19, resident hire on federal projects and with federal positions. And House Joint Resolution 22, the other resident hire resolution.
Any further announcements? Representative Boucher?
Mr. Speaker, may we move back up to guests, please, sir?
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Earlier, I introduced Virginia Belknap, and Virginia said she was busy in another area. So I'd like to introduce a young lady from ACC that we work very closely with, outstanding student, Virginia Belknap.
Any further guests for introduction? Back down to announcements. Any further announcements? Special orders. Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask permission of the floor to speak on the tourism industry.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Commerce Budget Subcommittee, and indeed in the halls of the House and the Senate, we've spent a lot of time this year talking about the tourism industry and the fact that they have and can, we hope, don't continue to have a lot of outside workers. I think when the industry does something that we should applaud them for, that someone should stand up here and say so. I would like to call everyone's attention to a full-page ad that was in the Juneau Empire this past Wednesday evening, sponsored by the Alaska Visitors Association, and in this case, the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau. These ads were put in this paper. They are summer jobs throughout the state to call attention to people, to jobs that they can apply for now. Most of them have April deadlines for applying. I understand that the same sort of ads have been done statewide in the Anchorage, Fairbanks, and other newspapers, also always done by the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the Alaska Visitors Association. This particular ad that was in Juneau has jobs in it from Fairbanks, Bettles, the West Tours operation has jobs throughout the state, Gustavus, King Salmon, Talkeetna, Haines, Anchorage, Soldotna, Cantwell, Palmer, Ketchikan, Valdez. I think this is a sign that the industry is listening to us, that they are making a great effort to hire Alaskans this summer and in future summers, and I do think we should applaud them for it. Mr. Speaker, while I have the floor, I would also like to speak on permit reform.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Wednesday, I introduced House Bill 212, an act relating to the issuance of permits and determinations. Because you asked that we have no special orders on the floor on Wednesday, I waited until today to talk about that bill. I introduced the bill in an effort to address some of the problems that we have heard in resources that have been perceived by the Minerals Commission, the Bureau of Land Management, the Resource Development Council, and many other groups throughout the state. My bill would transfer coastal zone consistency determinations from the Office of Management and Budget, an agency that has 20 employees handling resource coordination alone, to a more appropriate agency that already has the expertise to render those determinations. In effect, we would be streamlining the process and eliminating an entire layer of bureaucracy. As OMB now contracts out to our resource agencies to do the determinations anyway. We do not have as many dollars as we had when the Office of Governmental Coordination was created, and I think we need to look at ways together to create a more efficient and effective system. This bill has nothing to do with dirty water in, dirty water out, and the mining bill. Another section of the bill gives the Department of Natural Resources final authority in the permitting process relating to the programs they administer. Those programs include conservation and development of natural resources, forest, parks, recreation areas, land, water, agriculture, soil conservation, and minerals, but it excludes commercial fisheries, sport fish, game, and fur-bearing animals in their natural state. Our present system was created by the last administration as a result of the perceived no-development bias of the Hammond administration. For each of the past 4 years, the legislature has heard a myriad of complaints about the system that was set up. It is my belief that the permitting process remains cumbersome and inefficient. I've introduced this bill in an effort to focus the attention of yet another administration on the problem. It's my intent to open the dialogue between all the affected parties in an effort to help the administration attain its economic diversification goals and to alleviate the constant bickering we hear in committees about the permitting process. If nothing else, I want to bring these issues to the table and let the administration know that we are concerned. I appreciate all of those people who have co-sponsored the bill with me, and I would hope we'll have an early hearing and resources. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask the permission of the body to speak on the ship of state.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Speaker, we've had a lot of discussion lately about the revenue cycle and the revenue forecast of this state and how we should proceed. And kind of being from a coastal community, one morning I woke up and it kind of the analogy of a ship kind of struck me, and it was kind of interesting. And I think we have a ship of state that's going to leave the harbor here on July 1st, whether we like it or not. That's the new fiscal year. But the issue is, what kind of ship is it going to be? Is it going to be a ship with a single bottom? Is it going to have a rusty hull? Is the Liberian rust bucket, as we would call them? Or is it going to be a ship that's a safe ship? Does it have a double bottom so that if we run into some rocky spots that we have some safety involved? And I draw this analogy to that: how much money are we projecting our future on? Are we going to take a conservative number that gives us some security and some room to move, or are we going to project a number and do our budgeting on a number that takes us right to the fine line? And I think we should take a look if is this ship something we're designing for the long haul, or is this just for a short circuit? Are we going to go and try to put something in position that we can stay with and just do some maintenance work on, or are we going to have to haul it into the dry dock and rebuild it every year? And the other thing when you look at when you're in this area is, how big engine do you have? What kind of an engine? And the engine that's been powering this ship and this ship estate has been very large, but it's been one type of an engine. It comes from the oil industry. And not only is it a single engine that's been powering it, we've been depowering it and undersizing that engine every year. And we've been making it smaller and smaller and smaller. And matter of fact, this year, if we don't pass a bill, we're going to make the engine smaller yet. We're going to give about an $80 or $90 million tax break that I don't think should happen.
And the other thing you look at when you're pulling out in a ship is not only how big your engine is and how fast you're going to go or how powerful it is that what happens if it quits? Do you have an auxiliary? Do you have something else to carry on for a little while you make some major repairs? And to this date, you know, we have no auxiliary engine to the engine of oil and gas taxes. We have some proposals in front of us to say, we can't even replace it. We can't have a dual-engine ship here. We don't have the resources to have twin engines. But we do have the power here to enact an auxiliary tax. We do have the power to put an income tax in. We do have a power to put some other license fees tax in so that we have a little bit of horsepower along while we fix the big engine if something goes wrong with it. And another thing you look at when you come from a coastal community and you're setting out on a voyage is, what's the weather? Not only what the weather is today, but what's the long-range forecast? What's it look like out there? What should I prepare for? How many stores should I put on board? How much fuel should I have on board? Well, we can't tell what the weather is. We can tell the weather on July 1st when we leave, but we don't know what the weather out in the future. But if you're going to take and try to do a solo trip around the world, you're going to get some long-range forecasts. And I can tell you the long-range forecasts of oil prices are unstable. So the chances are you're going to run into some rough weather out in that trip, and you better take some reserves along. You better have some reserve fuel tanks in there, and you better have some reserves, and I think we should leave with some reserves in our budget account when we leave here. And the other aspect is the maintenance aspect. Are you going to build a ship that's just going to last 1 year, or are you going to build a ship that's going to last for a long haul so that you can just maintain it along the way? And I think we're faced with the issue here before us to take a look at the long haul and try to put a structure and a framework in place that we can maintain down the road. We don't have to haul it in and rebuild it and lengthen it and put another bottom in it every year or every other year. I think we should build a ship this year that we can maintain over the long haul. And that's just a coastal point of view, I guess, of taking a look at it. But the translation is that we ought to use conservative numbers when we're projecting our future. We ought to not give a major tax break this year. I think we need to add an auxiliary engine in or an auxiliary power plant that can get us through some rough spots. And we ought to leave some reserves in the bank account when we leave here. And I think we should be very careful so that we set up a stable situation with our revenue and get the state on a stable course. And I think that's what the people want us to do. And I think in the next 2 or 3 weeks and 5 weeks in particular, we're going to be working hard on those issues. And I think if people keep this analogy in mind, hopefully we'll come out with a good ship and a good weather forecast. Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask permission of the floor to speak on ships also.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Mr. Speaker, I certainly applaud the comments of the former speaker from my district, and also living in a coastal area, I also am concerned about ships. I'm concerned about whether or not that ship will have adequate reserves. And I know that this body last year let that ship of state sail with a large and an adequate reserve. At least we believed it to be adequate at the time, and I have full faith that this body will do the same this year. The question is, from where will we take the reserves? That question is going to be hotly debated, I assume, on this floor. There should also be another question asked, and that question is, should that ship be a Cadillac cruiser, or should maybe that ship be reduced a little in size, made a little more tight, a little more more successful in the weather, a little more durable? Maybe that ship should be a little more concerned about essentials. Maybe we don't have to have five meals going on in the galley and all of them with cream puffs, too. In addition, should we be concerned about how that ship was powered? I think every one of us should be very concerned about it. For many years, we've had a fine diesel engine pumping away in there. And we've put money aside for the rainy days and the stormy weathers. I think we are encountering some of those rainy days and some of those stormy climates right now. And we need to look at the reserves. Because are we going to power this ship off of oil and oil reserves? Or is this going to be a galley ship powered by the slaves, Alaska workers, if in fact that's where we're going to take the money to power this slave ship by imposing wages, then I think I would be opposed to a galley slave ship as opposed to that diesel cruiser that he was discussing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Now, who's going to talk about the crew that's going to man this ship? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask permission of the floor to speak on the danger of losing good neighbors.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
With some latitude, however, I would like to associate myself with the remarks of the skipper from Ketchikan and his earlier efforts to get crew members. Mr. Speaker, we are in danger of losing our fine little neighbors from across the street because they are in danger of losing their home. The public education process there feeds this process, and this process in turn feeds the public education process. The case is easily made that capital is an old school, so the argument continues. But let me add, our respective processes are in healthy proximity, perhaps a situation unique in our nation. Besides, if we close historical structures today, do we demolish them tomorrow? This will happen to our neighbor's home if we do not take charge. What price are we willing to pay for the precious little usable, tangible history left in our Alaska? If we sit idly by without comment, we will indeed lose some very good neighbors. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask permission of this body to speak on the safety of young children.
Are there any objections? Proceed.
A recent death in this community of a 7-year-old boy who was accidentally electrocuted has brought to mind to all of us the need to be particularly concerned about the safety of young children. When a young child dies for what appears to be no good reason, it makes us all very sad. But when young children in our community and in our state die because of abuse, it makes us not only sad but also mad. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and on the 1st of April, next Wednesday, I will be introducing some legislation which will increase penalties for child abuse and which I believe will make it easier for the prosecutors in the state of Alaska to successfully obtain convictions of child abusers. I'd like to talk just very briefly this morning about that, because nothing would please me greater than to have 40 co-sponsors on the legislation. Child sexual assault and child abuse in Alaska have reached epidemic proportions. In FY88, there were 185 cases of child sexual assault. That number had grown to 1,447 in FY86. And national statistics show that only 1 out of 7 cases actually get reported, and a much smaller percentage of that actually get successfully prosecuted. Moreover, the number of children who receive protective services due to child abuse has also risen in what I would describe as an astronomical number. 1 out of 19 children in Alaska last year received some kind of child protection services. Indeed, 9,222 children had such serious problems that some kind of assistance was requested and received from the state of Alaska, either child abuse or neglect. The cycle of violence, if gone unbroken, creates not only undue anguish and injury within the family, but also on the streets. Sons who witness their father's violence in the home have a 1,000% greater chance, indeed rate, of creating that kind of abuse for either their spouses or their children. We don't know what the statistics are on the number of people who commit crimes when they are adults who were abused as children, but experts in the field indicate that a very large percentage of these adults were abused as children. As a society, how do we break that cycle of violence? What do we here in the Alaska legislature do about this problem? Well, we first have to recognize it for what it is. It is a problem that we cannot hide from and we cannot cover up. It is a problem which needs our resources, not only in terms of intervention and protection of the victims, but prevention and treatment of the abusers and the victims. We have many worthwhile programs in the state of Alaska, but they are at risk, both in terms of a funding risk, but also a risk in terms of support from those of us who choose to ignore the problem, as we often do. We also need to tighten prosecution, because although I agree that our resources must first and foremost go to the victims, trying to get them out of the abusing situation, try to give them the kind of treatment and assistance that they need to overcome what they have experienced, I believe it is also time for us to face up to the fact that we make it incredibly easy for those who commit the abuse to never get successfully prosecuted. Part of the problem is some recent rulings by Alaska's Court of Appeals, which makes it much more difficult for prosecutors to obtain successful convictions. And I'd just like to talk briefly about that this morning, because that will be the substance of the bills that I introduce and which I would like your assistance with. In Covington versus State of Alaska, the Court of Appeals made it much more difficult to obtain successful convictions for sexual abusers that abuse more than once. Covington's victim was his natural daughter. He started abusing her at about age 9, continued to do so. Their first sexual intercourse was at age 16. It was a case of night after night, week after week, year after year. In this case, the Court of Appeals reversed Covington's conviction because his daughter could not be specific with the jury as to any particular instance. And hence, it was possible that some members of the jury were thinking of one instance of sexual intercourse and convicting him for that offense, while others were thinking of a different instance of sexual assault and convicting Covington for that offense. In effect, Covington, because of the frequency and number of occasions that he indeed attacked his daughter, was unable to convince the Court of Appeals that a jury could not be unanimous as to any specific act that he engaged in, and therefore his conviction was reversed. This case all but eliminates the prosecution of multiple sexual assaults on young children who cannot readily distinguish between events or remember specific nights. Indeed, the Covington decision rewards multiple sex offenders who offend against younger children. Recently, in a Ketchikan case, during the middle of a trial, the state was forced to dismiss the sexual abuse case against a child, although his testimony was that he was consistently abused by his father. On cross-examination, the child gave different dates than the state had elicited in direct examination. I give these two examples, and there are indeed hundreds of other cases just like this in the state of Alaska, that because the child cannot remember the specific event and cannot testify as to the specific event, the abuser gets off scot-free. There's another problem regarding admissibility of evidence in child abuse cases that I'd like to bring to your attention that I hope that you will join me in dealing with in this legislation. And it is the multiple offense of child abuse. A recent case in Juneau, which you have probably read about in the newspaper because a citizens group has become very involved with it, involved the death of a 20-month-old child. Next Monday will be the one-year anniversary of the death of that child. He died as a result of a kick or a punch to his stomach, which was so hard as to rupture his intestines. He died in the middle of the night without any medical care. And indeed, in that case, had it gone to trial, the prosecution would have tried to admit evidence that this was not the first, but a series of abuse which this child received from the live-in boyfriend of his mother. Indeed, only a couple of weeks earlier, his arm had been broken. A month or so earlier, his arm had been tied behind his back because he was using the wrong arm to eat with. I force you to deal with these facts to indicate to you that the kind of prosecution which must be put together in a case is being made very difficult by Court of Appeals rulings. The prosecutor would not have been allowed to bring into evidence the fact that this child's arm had been broken or any of the other abuse of which there was good evidence because of a ruling that shows that this kind of previous incident or previous events are inadmissible as being too prejudicial. Having reviewed these cases and a recent case in the state of Washington where a young child died as a result, again, of a series of abuse, I have come to the conclusion that we need a new offense. It is a child abuse offense which recognizes a pattern of conduct. When a child is being abused in his or her home by a parent or an authority figure, night after night, day after day, week after week, year after year, it is a very different kind of offense than a simple assault case. If I'm walking down South Franklin Street in front of the Red Dog Saloon and some drunk comes out and hauls off and slugs me, there are likely to be witnesses. It is one event. It is a relatively simple case to prove, and it'll probably be dealt with by our court system. But the very nature of child abuse cases in the privacy of people's homes, where there frequently aren't witnesses, and where we now find that because of court appeals rulings, we are making it even more difficult for the proof to be presented, I would submit to you it is a different kind of an offense. It deserves a more serious penalty, and we ought to have different rules of evidence associated with what kind of proof is permissible to be able to get successful convictions in these hideous cases. And I speak not only to those which result in death of a child, but also serious abuse. So, I will be submitting these bills on April 1st. I would like to hold a briefing session Monday at 9 a.m. for those of you who are interested in learning more about the bills. I would welcome you to come to my office 9 o'clock on Monday morning to discuss it. I would, again, welcome your participation and your co-sponsorship. I sincerely believe that child abuse, because it is so incredibly painful for us to come to grips with, is an example of a need in our society that has gone long, long overlooked and inadequately dealt with. And I would urge you during April, Child Abuse Prevention Month, to put as much energy as you can into helping those who want to make a difference to reduce child abuse in Alaska. Thank you very much.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Speaker, I move we revert to introduction of guest.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B with us is a former representative, Dave Cuddy.
Rep. Representative Cuddy, would you like to share with us a few words of wisdom?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further guests for introduction? Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the body stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Monday.
11 a.m. Monday.